You're listening to / watching episode 11 of the RJM Classic Motorcycles podcast. This week we're talking all about carrying tools, and we'll also be closing the show with a quick tip about optimizing control cables. So why don't we kick off, Ray, by asking you a bit about your background in terms of being well-equipped carrying tools on two wheels.
Well, I was pretty sport from the get-go in terms of tool carrying capacity, in that with an aerial arrow, not only do you have a very, very ample tool tray, but there's the rest of the dummy tank that you can fill with all sorts of junk, which I used to, including in the early days when I was still fairly sure about my charging system, a spare battery. So if I ever did get stranded anywhere with lack of volts, I could literally just swap it over. One of the things that happened as a result of my carrying capacity and my joy in carrying plenty of tools is that more people tended to make use of them than I actually did. And I did find in the finish that other people's lack of preparation, and particularly lack of servicing, deeply frustrating. The only time that I did get, to say the least, a certain amount of pride out of other people's use of my toolkit was during the 8 or 9 years that I marshalled at Sarah's Cottage at the Manx Grand Prix for the entire fortnight. I carried in those days quite a well-thought-out and fairly compact toolkit on the SR500 I was using at that time. And the race riders got to know that there were tools available at Sarah's Cottage, and were very often in practice sessions, if they were experiencing any difficulties, know that they could stop there and have use of some tools. Now, the funny side to that was, both in practice and during the race meetings, during the races themselves, where the Manx radio announced that so-and-so had stopped at Sarah's Cottage and made adjustments and had proceeded, all my friends around the rest of the course were saying, well, we know that whose toolkit he's borrowed.
It's funny when you talk about the storage space you have on an aerial arrow, because I've never laid a spanner on an aerial arrow, but with that dummy fuel tank there, I'm sure there's got to be at least one person who's gone and filled up their tools and sandwiches full of petrol.
Oh, I don't know. I think things like that are a bit of a myth, but who knows?
Well, there you go. And you've been slightly blessed, when I say blessed, like it wasn't deliberate, on your current A65 with a good set of luggage. And you've been in a situation that you can carry lots of tools and things like that, should you wish to. But that's not the case with your current project, is it?
No, I mean, I've got fixed luggage on the Tourer. And so I'm really quite well off for space. And as a consequence, you know, the more space you've got, the more you tend to fill it. but, of course, with the current project that is slowly nearing completion, the CAF Racer, I'm not going to have the benefit of that. In fact, on the Tourer, I even filled what originally was the toolbox with electronic equipment such as the Boyer Branston charge control and the ignition pack to keep them tidily out of the way. But I'm not even going to have that space to use in that way on the Cafe Racer, because I do genuinely need it for tools. And there's a little tray on the A65 just behind the oil tank underneath the fiberglass side panel that has a little zipped PVC bag that lives in there, that's actually bolted in there, that keeps the tools tidy. Now, I did actually get a replica one of those tool bags to use on the Cafe Racer, but actually I found in the States a new old stock one, and of course as much new old stock as I'm using on that machine, you know, for £25, it was too much to pass away.
I'm hearing you talk about the Cafe Racer, and I'm thinking further about the terminology, completely off topic, terminology Cafe Racer. There will be some people shouting at YouTube saying it's Caf Racer, not Cafe
no,
Racer.
No, it is. I mean, I know the Americans like to term it as a cafe bike. Well, no, I mean, that it's... A cafe bike is a different thing to a cafe racer, I'm sorry.
Well, I think it's one of those things where the terminology has slightly changed and you can risk going with public opinion or straying from it and having one camp thinking you're wrong anyway.
But as you rightly say, you know, the correct term is caf racer. Yeah. Because we don't speak French.
certainly not back in the 60s.
No.
There we go. You were talking about where this pouch is located. That's probably a good time to talk about just where do these toolkits live? Let's say someone's recently purchased a classic motorcycle. They're hearing us talk about the toolkits and thinking, well, I don't know anything about this. Where do you find them?
Back in the 50s, obviously, you had a deliberate toolbox that was bolted on one side of the bike or the other, usually the opposite side to where the oil tank was. Usually the battery lived in there as well. Again, with modern upgrades, these things tend to get filled up with ignition coils where you've replaced the magneto and transistor packs and charge control regulators and a whole bunch of wiring. But there was nonetheless a place for them. And back in the day, not only was there a good deal of space allowed for a fairly comprehensive toolkit, it came with a fairly comprehensive toolkit anyway. And, you know, by extension back then, things were made to be a lot user-friendly in the event of unforeseen incidents on the road. For example, if you've got punctures to deal with, very often the rear section of the rear mudguard would be separately unboltable so that you could remove the back wheel without having to sort of prop the whole back of the bike in the air somehow. And obviously on the front end, and a lot of people don't realise it, even up until the early 60s on Triumph, the strange shape of the bottom mudguard stay was actually because it was a front wheel stand. Yeah. So again, if you had to take the front wheel out, you've got to, you know, loosen one nut and you can deploy a stand that would keep the whole bike stable while the front wheel was out. Now, you know, those things haven't been provided for essentially since the mid 60s, so much of that. And also the space allocated for a rudimentary toolkit has got smaller and smaller over time. T140s obviously have a tray just at the back of the battery, which you know, holds the bare minimum. And there are similar places, well, even on modern machines, for the same kind of thing. The only thing actually is probably worth saying at this point is that if you're ever going to be in need of using any of these tools on the road, it's a damn good idea actually to at some point when you're doing routine servicing, to actually try using these tools for the purpose that they were intended, and you'll get an idea of whether it's actually going to work or not.
Something that always struck me as being odd early on is on a lot of machines, not like on a later Triumph, you actually need a tool or two to access the toolkit in the first place, be it the fiberglass side panels on A65s that you need to loosen off the Oddy studs, or be it pre-units, in which case you've got to undo the screw for the hinge. Carry a dumpy screwdriver, essentially, is the solution to that, is it not?
I think originally they were intended to be coin-operated.
I think that
was the idea that, yeah, you know, you should be able to find a suitable denomination of loose change within your pocket to be able to effect the same task. I don't know that necessarily applies with the A65, but frankly, with the Oddy studs and clips on those and the fact that those side panels never fit all that convincingly unless you spend a goodly amount of time finessing the fit and finish, you have more of a job keeping the damn things on than getting them off. So
I'm just wondering if there's a market for, you say about them being coin-operated, for some nice aftermarket ones to match the current distribution of coinage.
Well, there you go. Could be.
Somebody get on that. We need to cut that out. Don't tell anybody about that. You should, in terms of what should be in your toolkit, I'm assuming that what you'll find in your toolkit now may not be exactly what was in there in 1967, 8, whatever. But you can have a look in the parts list to tell you what it should originally have. And there's actually, because we were looking through the other day and researching this, and there's some really interesting things there in terms of space saving, like how your screwdriver that's in the kit also acts as the Tommy bar for a socket for a plug spanner or something, for example.
And is of itself reversible bladed, so you've got a flat blade one side and a flipped or a posi the other. And very often you'll get a combination box spanner, which has usually got, or very often got, a spanner on one end for the rear axle and a spanner on the other for the front axle.
Aside from what your toolkit would have come with originally, there's all manner of things that you can add to that with. Something that we've used a number of times just for double-checking tyre pressures is a little, and I suppose they're more intended for bicycles than anything else, a little digital tyre pressure gauge. But if you need to check your tyre pressures in a hurry, something like that in your toolkit doesn't take up a lot of space, and you can just check your tyre pressures quickly.
Yeah, I mean, particularly against the background of a lot of filling stations these days having coin-operated compressor pumps for doing your checking your tyres, and frankly, none of the gauges are that accurate, and you could essentially get a different set of tyre pressures every time you visit a different garage. I mean, back in the day when most filling stations were fronts for repair or service garages anyway, with a decent sized compressor going most of the day and with a good PCL pressure gauge out on the forecourt, the only thing occasionally you had to do was when you'd found a pet garage that you'd like to visit regularly, if you could just bend the nozzle slightly so it would actually go on a motorcycle wheel, if you could do that discreetly, then you knew you got somewhere you could always go to do your tyre pressures. And obviously, if you're using somewhere regularly, and if there is an error with air gauges, you'll learn very quickly what that error is and allow for it.
Of course, you should have originally had an inflator somewhere about in your toolkit. I think specifically, pre-unit Triumphs come to mind. Underneath the tank there is a provision for it often.
Yeah, and even on the late but pre-oiling frame A65s, there's a couple of little sort of residual brackets that are intended just to clip as they were called then, inflators, as obviously anybody who's ever ridden a bicycle knows what a bicycle pump is, same thing. And anybody who's ever tried to inflate bicycle tyres with a bicycle pump will know they're pretty much all damn nearly useless. You've only got to get a slightly leaky adapter and you can pump away until hell freezes over. You'll never get any meaningful air in. And if you're trying to do the same with a full-size motorcycle tyre and get it up to about 20 or 30 PSI, boy, you need to be fit.
So I suppose a good take-home message is don't be bound by the tools that were available in the era. You were talking about trying to find space for an alternative method of inflation on
obviously one of the emergency tyre inflation devices that's been around for a long time is the old aerosol can with the foam. Finelec was the original branding that comes to mind. Obviously they're a little bit bulky, but if you can find somewhere discreet on the machine to stash one of those somewhere where it's not going to be subject to a lot of vibration and rubbing on things, because obviously the last thing you want is the thin wall of those aluminium canisters to be breached. The other thing is, of course, nowadays you've got little CO2 bulb inflators as well, and that's probably a better idea if you can find room for those.
Speaking of finding room for things, something that is worth finding space for is a set of spark plugs, and you can gap them first as well, so they're ready to go when you need them. I recently kitted out an A10 Super Rocket thusly. It had come back for a 500-mile tighten down, and while it had been away, it had acquired instead
Where did he find those plugs?
Well, I mean, originally should have had, and what we put in it when it was last in, was a set of B7 ES sparking plugs. And it came back in with, I think, a B6 HS on one side and the other one wasn't. Something altogether strange.
The other one was a BPR 10 ES. So he got a pair of short-reach plugs where long-reach ones should be. And again, with a 50-year-old thread in an aluminium head on an A10, you really don't want to be doing things like that, because you'll ruin half the thread, you know, the first time you try and tighten it, if you're really unlucky. So we will no doubt find out in the fullness of time quite why the occasion arose that he had to resort to this. But, you know, even in emergencies, you don't want to be using stuff that is quite as inappropriate as that, because you really could cause problems. Carrying spare part spark plugs today, whilst that seems like a legacy from the dim distant past, where you know you'd foul a plug really quite easily, either by overuse of chokes or if the motor was burning a bit of oil or whatever. But of course, we've got a new problem that has emerged resultant from the composition of modern road fuel. If you're either running a little rich or tickle a little heavily, or you know, hang on to the choke a little bit longer than was ideal, you can again foul a plug in an instant. So you really do need to be carrying a pair of spark plugs. You can buy nice little plastic containers that will keep them safe and prevent the pre-gap plug from being de-gapped. And obviously a plug spanner you can physically use with a bite. Those are absolute must as an absolute minimum. And then, of course, you know, fuses. And make sure they are the ones you're actually using on the bike. For the benefit of all sorts of repairs, but obviously primarily cable repairs, a length of inner wire and some solderless screw-on nipples is a jolly good idea.
Yes, what we have seen before, and there's a specific example I can think of, is along the whole length of the clutch cable, there's been another clutch cable tied to it for the full length of the run. Now, that's all well and good, but of course that's exposed to the elements in the same way the one that's fitted is. So when that cable's no good, the one you've got cable tied next to it isn't going to be a whole lot better.
Well, and the fact that it's never been actually used, so the cable, inner cable, has never moved in the outer cable, and it's been subject to all the same wind and rain and pestilence, means that it really is a non-starter, and frankly it just looks bloody messy. and frankly, if you've got to resort to that, you'd be far better off, you know, with some regular routine maintenance, you know, because actually if you're maintaining a bike reasonably, if the cables do start to fail, you should get pretty good advance warning of it and should be able to deal with it on servicing.
Rounding off on the A10 Super Rocket, essentially what I did was fit a fresh set of B7 ESs after gapping them. Got a couple more, took them out of the box, gapped them back in the box, opened the toolbox and actually Velcroed them in place, which worked very well.
So he's got no excuse now.
Certainly not for the next set.
What we used to back in the day as a source of spare inner wire, and bearing in mind I'm a St Albans lad originally, we used to trundle up to Hummingbird Motorcycles and get a replacement Lambretta inner gear cable, because that had it was the right gauge cable and it was long enough to cover just about any eventuality on pretty much any bike.
Didn't you have a situation once where your nipple had come off your clutch cable and you found another way to operate the clutch cable?
I can remember various on the road remedies at various times. But on this occasion, I think it was a fact of just literally pulling the outer wire off it and physically wrapping and jubilee clipping the end of the cable to the brake pedal and backing off the brake adjustment so that you were actually using the brake pedal as a clutch pedal.
What kind of routing did that cable go via?
Just straight over the engine case. It was on a Triumph Twin. I mean, it left some nasty marks, but, you know, back in the day when you didn't have the benefit of a mobile phone and an RAC card, and the alternative was, you know, sort of pushing it to the nearest railway station and sticking it in the guard's van, you know, it was preferable.
Yeah. So I suppose just to wrap up, unless you've anything else to say, good take-home messages: know where your toolkit should live, know what should be in it, and get as creative as you can in terms of adding extras to it. And really, as just you were touching on there, really one could argue you shouldn't need a toolkit at all in this day and age, because you should have a mobile phone, you should have an RAC card or whatever, and you should be covered on that front.
The only thing I would say from my point of view on that is that, very often if you pick the wrong day and the wrong time of day, you can be waiting an absolute age before the cavalry arrive. And on the odd occasions when I have hit problems on the road, you may remember actually one of the first very, very early runs you and I had when you were very much smaller on the A65.
I'd have to have been very much smaller.
We got a fair old way locally up the A1 when it was clear that the float had sunk in one of the carburettors. And if you remember, we got home by dint of actually using the petrol tap as a float control, and literally got it started, turned the fuel on, rode it until we heard the spluttery of oversupply of fuel, turned the fuel tap off again and carried on going till we heard the spluttery of fuel running out, and turned it back on again, and we limped back to base that way.
and really something like that just goes to show that was a slightly different situation, because that was running in. But no matter how well equipped your toolkit is, there's no real substitute for keeping up with routine servicing, wouldn't you agree?
No, that's absolutely right. And as I say, that was one of my frustrations when I first started carrying tools, and people knew that I carried tools, because I got very often delayed because I was helping people. And, you don't mind and you want to be of help. But when it was every bloody time you go out, you're trying to help sort out somebody else's, mechanical malaise as a result of lack of servicing, it does get a little bit tedious. The other thing which I remember is we were, I think you were there. Yeah, I know you were there. We were at a meeting, I think, of the Stevedoring District one Monday night in a pub somewhere, and the subject of tools and toolkits and space for toolkits, or lack of space on modern machines came up, and there was a certain amount of mildly alcoholic banter going on. everybody started removing their dual seats and what have you to check their toolkit was there and where it might live and so forth. And then our good friend Chris, he ripped the saddle off his Speed Triple, I seem to remember he had at the time.
Speed 4, I think.
Was
actually.
It a Speed 4? Anyway,
yeah,
wouldn't have found storage space underneath that dual seat for a spare condom, much less, anything you could repair the bloody bike with. And I turned to him and said, Chris, when you go on a picnic, where do you put your sandwiches? And he turned to me and he said, in your panniers.
And of course, if you're the man with the aerial arrow who did fill his sandwiches and tools and whatnot up with fuel, do let us know in an email or a comment down below. Lots to think about there, I hope. Now, here's this week's quick tip. So if you've got a set of control cables on your motorcycle, and well, hopefully you should do, otherwise you can't really ride it, over time and due to a number of factors, they can become less than efficient. So the point of this week's piece of advice is just to share a few little suggestions of something you could do right now just to ensure that you're making the most of your cables. And obviously, a fairly obvious one of these to do is to lubricate them, right?
Yeah. There certainly used to be a myth when nylon-lined control cables first came on the menu that you shouldn't lubricate them because it would cause the nylon to swell up and obviously have the reverse effect of that was intended. Now, I don't know whether that was ever true, but certainly in more recent times, not only is it perfectly okay to, but positively beneficial to lubricate, as well as having the benefit of the nylon line cable, which does result in some very light to operate and some very slick controls.
Another thing it's worth checking is the adjustment on all of your cables. I know with the cables we make up, we always make sure we've got some method and probably more methods than you necessarily need, giving you full options and a full range of adjustment as you need it. And I'm thinking specifically of choke and throttle cables. This is important because it's important to make sure that your air slide is going all the way down, so you've got the option of full choke, and also making sure it goes all the way up again, so it's not restricting matters when you don't want it to. By the same token, your throttle slides should be snapping down nicely and going up fully, and if they're not, obviously that can cause further complications. Ray, it's also important to optimise your brake cables, for example.
Yeah, I mean, we found some years ago that even the correct cables that were produced by the manufacturer for a given machine, in many cases, aren't an ideal length, both overall length and free length, to give you best action on the brake, particularly, for example, late pre-oil in-frame A65s, Triumph Twins, Starfires, TR25Ws that use either the 7 or the 8-inch twin-leading shoe front brake, you often find that if you can reduce the overall cable length to the minimum needed to get from the brake unit to the lever, and even without too much in the way of nice parabolic curves, which actually oftentimes create inefficiency in control operation rather than improve matters, and literally get a pretty accurate length to the inner wire, can make that brake feel completely different and improve it out of all proportion.
You touched on something else there, which we should come on to now, which is the routing of cables. Thinking specifically of throttle cables, particularly on Triumphs, we've seen all kinds of strange routings with cables going through holes with grommets in them in headlamp brackets, or going through on an oil in frame where you've got the grommets for the wires for the switch blocks to go into. But we try and avoid all of that, don't we?
We do. I mean, you know, you can almost always find some improvement in cable routing. Part of the problem that causes a lot of this adverse routing is that cables are not made as accurately now relative to a particular application as they used to be. And even when they are, you've invariably got different handlebar furniture to what was originally intended for the bike. So there are any number of complications, and we were working on one, I think, oil in frame Triumph Twin many, many moons ago, that somebody bought in a set of throttle cables or choke cables, and they really weren't the right length, and they'd effectively wrapped them a complete revolution around the down tube with the front of the frame to try and lose the extra length. So actually, end of the day, there's no substitute for being able to make bespoke cables for a given machine.
Yeah. Ultimately, though, poor routing over a long period of time can be fatal. I recently made up a new set of throttle cables for an A50. And after removing the old one, the kink in the cable was so pronounced that even after removing it, it was still sat at basically a 90-degree angle of where it had sat before.
Yeah. And of course, without wishing to sound crude in any way, one of the real important things is don't forget to grease your nipples.
Well, that's all from us this week. If you like that, you can subscribe on YouTube, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also visit our website, rjmclassic.com, or email me specifically about the podcast at rjmpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.